The Lion Lounge is now working. If you'd like to participate in that way in the Lion Lounge, you're welcome to do that. When I think about where we are on the path to equality, whether we are becoming wiser in the inclusion of women, I think of my own family's journey across the generations. Specifically, I wondered how career opportunities and choices of the women in my family have changed over time. My mother grew up in Toronto, the eldest of three children. In her youth, she was fascinated by science and committed to helping people in her community. My mother's dream was to become a doctor. And in her last year of high school, she prepared her application to a pre-medicine program at the University of Toronto. However, when the guidance counselor at her high school saw her application, he placed it in the pile for nursing school instead. And so my mom trained to become a nurse. Recently, I told this story to a woman in her 70s, a woman I had just met. Before I had finished the story, she finished it for me. This kind of outcome, this incredible disempowering of young women, appears to have been common back then. When my sister and I were growing up, our mom wanted something more for us. More power, more ability to choose, more choices. "You can be anything you want," she said. "Choose any career, reach for the stars, change the world." I took that message to heart. While still in elementary school, I had very specific goals. To be the first woman judge in the Supreme Court of Canada. Or to be the country's first woman neurosurgeon. Or maybe both. Well, I didn't achieve either of those lofty goals. Other women did that before I had finished high school. But I am fortunate to have lots of education and a career that I love. However, as a woman, I know I have faced hurdles to achieve my goals. I have felt pressure to be someone that I'm not, just to be taken seriously. I have, on many occasions, other people have taken credit for my work. I also find that balancing work and family has been a struggle sometimes. When our children were born, I realized that my career might not follow the path I had once imagined. Daycare was expensive and hard to find, and there was so much to do to support the family. So for many years, I pursued work opportunities that have allowed me to work from home mostly. The other day, I sat with my 14-year-old daughter, Bridget, and I asked her, does she think the world is supporting more choices for women? What does she wish for her future? I know, big questions to ask a teenager. Bridget acknowledged that she has more opportunities before her than I have had, and certainly my mother had. But Bridget told me that, depending on the field she chooses, she fears that she will have to work harder just to belong. And she sees the ongoing racism, sexism, and discrimination in our world. In true teenage fashion, Bridget replied to my question in this way. She said, "There are lots of great women out there who have way better ideas than Donald Trump, but he's the one who got elected." And she said, "A lot of women don't get recognized because old, white, rich guys take their spots." Oh, the wisdom and the bluntness of youth. Yet despite my struggles and Bridget's skepticism, I am optimistic and hopeful for young women in future generations. Examining the trajectory of my own family shows me that the world has changed for women. Bridget does have more career choices than I had, and I have had more exciting opportunities than my mother had. There is still lots of work to do, but I believe that we are moving in the right direction. So on today's International Women's Day, I choose to celebrate.
It would be a gift to be simple, but I have a feeling that was not simple to learn. So thank you, Farmhouse Ringers, for learning that wonderful song. Well, this morning's reading comes from the essayist Rebecca Solnit, who was recently introduced to me, S-O-L-N-I-T. She wrote a book in 2014 that friends were telling me about that was entitled Men Explain Things to Me. And the idea many people tell me is that lots of people read that book and were inspired by it, and that's part of where the term mansplaining came from, even though Rebecca Solnit herself did not coin that term or necessarily even agree with it. But apparently, even just that title, Men Explain Things to Me, for her book, came from her own experience of being at a dinner party talking with someone who was telling her about concepts in a book that she had written. And her saying, yeah, I wrote the book, I know. And they were like, no. And she's like, no, I wrote the book. And the guy still didn't believe her. So the reading this morning is by a piece that Rebecca Solnit wrote in The Guardian recently that was entitled, Younger Feminists Have Shifted My Understanding. As you grow older, you become an immigrant from a vanished country. A country some of your peers may remember, but the young find unimaginable or incomprehensible. You could call it the land of before some great change, before we did things this way, before we decided that was unacceptable, before we shed new light on an old problem. I was shaped by a world that no longer quite exists, so I can't imagine myself at, say, 18 in the present moment, because to do so is to imagine someone utterly different. She does not exist, and I, as we all do, exist as the cumulative effect of my experiences, opportunities or lack thereof, and ideals. So much of what shaped and scarred my younger self and made me a solitary feminist, and then much later one among many, was the unspeakability of violence against women and all the denigration, harassment, and silencing that went with it. It was epidemic, and yet every incident was supposed to be an isolated incident, and nobody was supposed to connect the crimes to the culture that relished violence against women as entertainment and denied it existed in any significant way as fact, and made sure that prevention and prosecution were as feeble as they were rare. All those forces still exist, but something else does alongside them. A vigorous conversation. Speaking and naming and describing and defining, rejecting the excuses and cover-ups and justifications. Feminism is part of an immense endeavor on all 7 continents, and sometimes a space station or two, to change how we imagine gender, rights, equality, consent, voice, to create a conversation that invites participation for those who have felt excluded, silenced. It's a conversation about race, gender, sexual orientation, trans rights, disability rights, religious freedom, neurodiversity, and so much more. And about how these things can intersect in a single person or interaction. Anyone in this conversation learns from others to look harder, see farther, ask new questions, use new terms that admit new possibilities. It is as though we are wandering through the night, each with our small light, sometimes all shining our beams on the same problem until we see it so clearly, passing descriptions from one to another, building trail maps together, sharpening the focus until we reach somewhere new or become something new. Where are we on the path to equality? When I became a feminist back in college, it all seemed pretty simple. Women should be treated and paid and promoted to high levels of government and corporate life just as much as men. It was all about equality that has had and has never yet arrived. My understanding at that time mostly stretched only so far as to get that in terms of violence against women and equity in the workplace and in politics. Women had come a long way, I understood. After all, there was a time when women didn't have the vote or work outside the home. But still, I could see in my studies then, in the early 90s, that there was still a long way to go. What I didn't understand back then, and didn't understand until much later, is what Solnit explains so clearly. This isn't just an accumulation of personal, individual losses for particular women. It is a collectively created barrier that is harming us all. I suppose you could say that the short answer to my own question, where are we on the path to equality, is that we have come a very long way. And yet, as the Me Too movement and more recent conversations about feminism and the backlash against it have shown, we still have a shockingly long way to go to full equality. Perhaps it shouldn't be a shock. We've come this far, all the way to 2020, with women still paid 79 cents for every dollar a man makes. But it still amazes me that it is a radical notion that women are equal to men. Why should that be radical? More recent conversations about toxic masculinity and a rise of a group calling themselves incels or involuntary celibates have raised concerns about how the long-standing inequality between genders has left a toll and a mark on us all. We were recently watching a mainstream television show in which there was a group of men protesting outside of a women's clinic. One of the protesters on this show proclaimed loudly, "Masculinity is not a crime." And indeed, it isn't. And yet the brand of it that has been wielded over the centuries, and even as recently and as horrifically as that van attack in Toronto, you may recall from April of 2018, and maybe even recall from the Harvey Weinstein trial only a few weeks ago, it can be quite literally shaped into a weapon. How has it come to this? The expectations of gender have become so rigid and so defining as to hurt those who feel trapped within them and eager to get out, sometimes so willing to and eager to get out that they are willing to hurt those who damage their sense of fitting well enough into these intensely circumscribed boxes. We can hurt one another because we want desperately to get out of a box. We can hurt one another because we have felt desperately held into a box. Either way, harm is inflicted. The boxes themselves were never never, never meant to hold. So how do we honor people's self-definitions, allow everyone room, as the kids and I were demonstrating this morning, to move, to become their whole selves? I've been thinking a lot as this International Women's Day approached about how we might advance progress down the path. I've been trying to even imagine, because our world has made it so hard to even imagine, what true equality for people of all genders would look like. And so I'm going to invite you in a moment to just take a moment of silence to just kind of picture what equality for people of all genders and what true equality for women who've been marginalized for so long, so historically marginalized for so long, what that would even look like. What would true equality, if it existed, look like in politics, in business, in the entertainment industry, and in how we relate to one another in our families and in our communities? Take just a moment to try to picture, maybe even dream, about what that would look like. When you picture that world, how does it feel different? What do you notice? How are people around you treated? How are you perceived and treated? What assumptions are made about you, and what is no longer assumed? I think assumption is a key word. I don't know about you, but I am struck by how often I make assumptions about other people. I am even more caught by how often those assumptions or perceptions are completely wrong. And if I don't remain open, or if I am too stuck in my view to take in new information, I will place someone in a box of my creation. I will take away their agency, their ability to self-identify, because I will write a script for them that I expect them to follow. I will place them neatly into that container and expect them to act accordingly. A colleague introduced me recently to a concept that I found very helpful. The concept is called the ladder of inference. Ladder, like a climbing rungs of a ladder. The ladder has 7 different steps that we each of us often take as we climb the ladder of inference. The first one is we observe. The first rung, we observe something, someone. The second thing is, after we have observed, we select. We pick one thing to focus on. I choose data from what I have observed that I think is important. The third thing we then do is we add meanings. We add something to what we have collected and selected. It could be personal to me, it could be culturally informed, but we add some sort of meaning to that thing that we have chosen to focus on. The fourth piece of the puzzle is assumptions. There it comes in. I make assumptions based on the meanings that I have assigned to the person or the situation. And then, as I climb that next rung, I haven't just made an assumption, I then move to making a conclusion. I draw some significant conclusion from what I have seen. The sixth step is beliefs. I create my own beliefs based on these things that I have seen and noticed. And the seventh step is I take action in the world based on all of this. And as my colleague explained it to me, we climb and reclimb the ladder over and over again. It's a reflexive loop. Observe, select, add meaning, assume, conclude, add beliefs, make some actions, rinse, repeat, wash, do it again, right? There's nothing wrong with this reflexive loop unless we're not learning anything along the way. If I get stuck in a loop in which my assumptions and my conclusions and then my beliefs and therefore my actions become so rigidly defined that I see and assume the same thing over and over and over again, I'm in trouble. The boxes that I will create will become more and more entrenched in my own thinking. We do this with many things. We do it with race, we do it with class, we do it with gender, and in even more simple ways as well. We do it all the time. Am I safe in this situation? Will I fit in this crowd? The question is, sometimes the loop serves us well, but can we interrupt it when it isn't? Can we interrupt the loop and say, that assumption I just made, I've made that one 10 times now. Might be time to do something different. Can we add new insight? Can we stop replicating the same assumptions, assuming the same meanings, believing the same beliefs that no longer serve us? Gender biases and assumptions are deeply entrenched. We have to actively unlearn and relearn that gender, and specifically in honor of International Women's Day today, of womanhood and femininity, are not what we have been told. It's almost like we bought a bad sale of goods on this one. Women take many forms. Women deserve full equality and to live without fear of violence or sexism or misogyny. I almost cried when I saw a picture this week of a girl holding a sign at one of the many now annual women's marches. She looked to be a girl of about 10, holding a sign that said, "My coach told me I run like a girl. I told him if he ran faster, he could too." Next to her, a friend holds a sign that says, "Girls just want to have fundamental human rights." In order for International Women's Day to become a celebration not of what could be, but rather of what is, we will have to climb down from our ladders, make space, and then be willing to run after our daughters and granddaughters toward a future in which women are equally paid, equally valued, and equally seen for all of their contributions to our world. May that day arrive ever so soon. We need all the contributions that these young women can make. Can I get an amen on that one? Amen. And blessed be. I love that. Isn't that a great sign? My coach told me I run like a girl, and I told him if he ran faster, he could too. I invite you to rise in body or spirit to sing a song from our teal hymnal that we rarely ever sing. It's from the Christian tradition, and so sometimes we shy away from these songs. Let's just name it. But I think that some of the songs that our Christian siblings sing invite this beautiful image of all of us together in a place of hopefulness and freedom and peace. And one such song is "Shall We Gather at the